Okay, this is Nate. He will do talk about like responsible disclosure and what to do and what not to do if you find some kind of security vulnerability or something. So give him a warm round of applause.
This thing is on. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is my first time at CCC, and I'm very excited to be here. So we are at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. I will start by saying a little bit about who we are and what we do. We are a nonprofit digital civil liberties group based in the United States in San Francisco, California. There are about 15 lawyers, and we have a total of about 50 staff. We do free speech, privacy, users' rights, innovators' rights. We fight for a sane copyright system. We fight for a sane patent system. We do legislative activism in the United States, in Europe, all around the world. We write blog posts. And pertinent to this talk, we represent coders. I am part of EFF's Coders' Rights Project. The other major contributor to the project is sitting right in the middle of the room. We work to protect the rights of coders, security engineers, developers, everyone building a safer internet. There are a lot of laws and regulations and difficult egos involved in the pieces that put together, that comprise the internet. And we work to help security researchers, coders, developers navigate all of those pieces. This is, as I said, EFF's first time at CCC, but this isn't our first time doing this kind of work. We at EFF have been helping coders do what they do for a very long time. I've been doing it for not quite as long as most of the many of the people at EFF, including some of the people in this room. But this, as I said, this is not my first security conference, and I know a very small amount, but I do know something about what I'm about to say. Hopefully, fingers crossed. The theme of this talk is one size does not fit all. I put it in the abstract, and I'm going to say it a bunch of times. What do I mean by that? This talk is titled Disclosure Do's, Disclosure Don'ts. I did not title it Responsible Disclosure. I didn't title it Vulnerability Reporting. I'm not going to make any moral judgments about whether you disclose, about how you disclose, if you disclose publicly, if you disclose privately, if you participate in a bug bounty program. All of those choices are yours to make and not mine to judge. Okay, the biggest disclaimer of the night. I am a lawyer. I am not your lawyer, unless you already have me as your lawyer, which I don't see any of my clients in the room, but it's possible. But I'm not your lawyer. I'm not going to give you legal advice in this talk. The biggest reason for that is when I give you legal advice, it has to be in a confidential situation. This is not confidential. This is being streamed, hello, online. So it is not possible for me to give you legal advice in this environment. However, feel free to contact EFF, info@eff.org, and my email address will be at the end of the slides, nate@eff.org. It's pretty difficult. For help finding a lawyer. EFF, it is possible that we could be your lawyer, but we have a very long list of very good lawyers who do this kind of work, sometimes even for free. EFF does all of its work for free, and some of our cooperating attorneys do that work for free as well. So if you need a lawyer, you're not going to get one right now, but I can try to help you get one. As I said, this talk is not going to be me judging you. What you do is your business, and it's my job to help you do what you do better, more efficiently, and not get in trouble for it, hopefully. Also, what this talk isn't, I'm not going to give you a formulaic approach to disclosure. As I said, the theme is one size does not fit all. For each security vulnerability, there's going to be a different approach to reporting it, and there's all sorts of reasons why that's true. And of course, this talk will not be legal advice. I'm going to try as hard as I can to not give any legal advice. I am going to let you ask questions. My voice, I've been sick for a while, and my voice is not going to hold out for an hour, so there's no way that I can talk for a full hour. So I will let you ask questions. If you ask a question that calls for legal advice, I'm very sorry in advance. I will not be able to answer it, at least not on stage. Disclosure. Okay, what is disclosure? You found a vulnerability in someone else's project. Now what? What is a vulnerability? You hopefully all have a vague concept of what a vulnerability is. I'm not going to really get into it, but they can look like, they can take different forms. All the various types of vulnerabilities that you might want to disclose, it could be a customer data leak, it could be something as simple as a buffer overflow, it could be a DNS poisoning attack. All of these are vulnerabilities. You might want to disclose anything that looks like a vulnerability, and hopefully these do's and don'ts will give you some inkling about how to disclose those anything you find. However, if you want to sit on the vulnerability, if you want to keep it quiet and use it for yourself, if you want to sell the vulnerability on the open market, then this talk is not for you and you don't need my advice. See the title of this talk, which is Disclosure Do's and Disclosure Don'ts. This talk will talk, I will talk about disclosure. I will not talk about sitting on a vulnerability or selling a zero day. The first question to ask yourself, what's your goal in disclosing the vulnerability? The first goal, which many people have, is they want to fix all the things. If you found a vulnerability, your goal in disclosing it might be to patch that vulnerability. This is probably the biggest reason that people disclose vulnerabilities. Probably the second biggest reason is because you want to publish it or present it. You want to publish a paper or give a talk saying, holy crap, GSM encryption is broken, and I proved it, and here's how. And that leads to number four. You might get famous doing it. People have gotten famous doing it, and that's great. You might get paid. Some people actually have gotten paid, and I will talk a little bit more about that, but there's a question mark at the end of that one. All of these goals are great. I'm not here to tell you which one is better than any of the rest. For the rest of the talk, however, I will try and focus my various points of advice or various do's or don'ts on the various goals. Some of them obviously will have broader application than just one, but some of them will really be focused on just one of those goals or another. Okay, number one, and this is the most important, disclosure due. Remember that developers are people too. Computers are machines and software runs on computers, and so you can think of software as a machine. But the people who design the computers and the software that runs on them are people. They are like you, more or less, and they have all of the faults and flaws and egos that people have, specifically that hackers have, because if someone developed a DNS system and you're a DNS hacker, the person who developed the DNS system is also a DNS hacker, and she might be more like you than you think. What does that mean? Many of the problems that the security researchers that we've counseled at EFF have run into might have been avoided if they had taken the title of this slide to heart. Developers are people too. What do I mean by that? As I said, developers have egos. Developers often are corporations who face stiff bottom lines. They have money to win or to lose based on what you're going to tell the world, or maybe what you're going to tell their biggest customer, or maybe what you're going to publish at DEF CON or at CCC. How you tell them that might really piss them off, it might really endear them to you, and it might do anything in between. There are ways of telling people that their product sucks in words other than your product sucks. So don't say that, at least not at the beginning. Disclosure do your homework. One of the things that we've noticed over the years is that a lot of people in our business don't necessarily have a lot of patience. If you discover an open port on a hospital's patient database, you might just email the system administrator, let's say you can find their email address, and say, look, I was able to get on your database and download all these social security numbers and all these patient records. Take a step back before you send that first email and do your homework. Okay, is this an Activision or is this an Intel? What do I mean by that? Is this a company that has a history of suing the crap out of people, or is this a company who's dealt with security vulnerability reporting many times in the past and is well-versed in how to handle it? Again, is this the first time a company has received a security vulnerability report? You probably won't be able to tell that offhand, but you may be able to tell that just from looking. Is this Facebook? Has Facebook received any security vulnerability reports? Yes, they've received lots. They know how to handle this sort of thing. Is this a very small medical device manufacturer? Have they received a security vulnerability report? Probably not. They might not even be thinking along the lines of security. They might say, why would anyone other than a doctor ever try to communicate with a heart implant? Google is your friend here. Before you send that first email, before you click submit on that first form, Google the problem. Google to see if this is a problem that anyone else has discovered in the past. Is this a known vulnerability that the company has 6 Bugzilla tickets open for? Is this a company that has a bug bounty program? Google is your friend. Okay, now this is related back to the very first. Find a person to whom to disclose. The closer you can get to the very person who developed the product with the vulnerability, the better. Why? Because you want whoever you're talking to be able to understand WTF you're talking about. If you email Verizon tech support and say that, I don't know, they're leaking IMSI numbers on their on some sort of SQL database that's open that you can get with a get command, the tech support person is going to say, huh, what are you talking about? So you want to find someone as close as you can to the engineers on the team that develop the product that you're actually looking at. Why? The closer you get to the product itself, the more likelihood that A, you'll be taken seriously, and B, you'll be taken less seriously in the way that, like, ooh, hackers, right? You don't want to come across as an ooh, hacker. You want to come across as a hacker, like as we would understand it here, the kind of people who put a system of vacuum tubes to send messages around a conference center, and not the kind of people who break into banks in the middle of the night to steal credit card numbers. Finding a person is more homework. This is, again, why you don't just submit to Verizon tech support. If it's an open source project, great. You should be able to find the person's email address and probably pictures of their cats online. And finding whoever actually developed the product should be easy. If it's a commercial product, this is weird, but LinkedIn can actually be helpful in this situation. You can search on LinkedIn for security engineer. If it's a big company, maybe they'll have one. Maybe someone that you knows someone at that company. That would be awesome. One of the things that we found is, even if you don't know anyone at the company, you don't know anyone at the team, finding an in the company will both get you taken more seriously and make it less likely to scare the crap out of that company. Scaring the crap out of the company is never a good thing, even if what you found is scary. You don't want to scare them needlessly. Disclosure due. Make a good first impression. The first contact will be the most important and hopefully will set the tone for the rest of your interaction with the developer. This is why you don't send an email titled, your project sucks, it's leaving all iPhones open to having their contacts databases scraped, like Snapchat, for instance. You want to ease into it. You know, hello, my name is so-and-so, or, you know, if you're not going to give your name, hello, my contact information is so-and-so, and I have found a security vulnerability in your product that maybe you would like to help them fix. How important is the issue that you have found? How important is the bug? Is it a mere nuisance or is it a significant public safety matter? Your first impression, your first contact should give whoever's reading it some hint of what this is. You don't necessarily have to include full proof of contact code or proof of concept code in your first interaction with the company, but you should let them know if this is like gonna bring down all of IPv4, or if this is gonna let someone copy a game token. Because both of those are security vulnerabilities that are worth reporting, but really one is more important than the other. Is this gonna kill people? Are you gonna be able to like stop Dick Cheney's heart? Or are you gonna be able to play copied Wii games? Don't over or undersell your research. If you've found the game console type, don't say that lives are at stake. If lives are at stake, don't say you found a minor issue. And don't threaten. Don't. It's a terrible idea. I don't care. I'm going to come close to judging you a couple of times in this talk, and this is one of them. It's just bad. If your first language is not that of the developer, be extra careful. If your first language is English and the developers are Finnish, make sure that you're not using idioms like I used in the second slide when I said this is not my first time at the rodeo. If your first language is German and you're reporting to Microsoft, maybe get someone to help you with your English. If your first language is not that of standard human interaction and you're mostly a computer person, maybe get someone who knows how to do that. If it's 3 a.m. and you're on your 7th club mate, maybe wait until 10 the next morning to send the email to make sure that you're really kind of on the same page as the suit and tie or, you know, polo and Dockers guy who's there. Don't make a demand or ultimatum on the first contact. That's really bad. There may be times when you kind of have an ultimatum, which I'll get to later, but don't make it sound like an ultimatum, at least not on the first contact. Do not demand compensation or a job, at least on the first contact. If they want to pay you, they will. You demanding it won't make it so, unless you know you're a hacker who's stolen 30 million credit card numbers and you want to blackmail them, and if so, this is not the talk for you. Offering your help is fine. Making your help contingent on anything could lead to problems. So, do not offer to keep quiet in exchange for something or anything, money or otherwise. Researchers have been accused of extortion for doing this. I don't know much about European law, but in the United States, if you offer to keep something quiet in exchange for money, there's at least a colorable argument that what you just did is a crime. And I think that what you just did may or may not be a crime, but I'm not going to advise it either way. It's simply not a good idea. I did not title this talk Responsible Disclosure, but that's really not responsible at all, so don't do it. Don't say too much too soon. This don't is contingent. There may be times when the type of vulnerability is such that you can really just send, like, let's say this is, I don't know, Tor, and you found an easy bug, and for whatever reason, you don't want to use a bug submission, you want to disclose it as a security vulnerability, you might want to go ahead and give like the patch along with the vulnerability report. However, if this is, let's say, a hospital and you've found a way in to look at patient records, you might not want to email them the entire database of patient records that you downloaded from their site in your first contact. That could incriminate you later on. I'll get to it later, but you know, it's not the best idea to go about telling people all of the bad stuff you did before you know how they're gonna receive it. Okay, and now I'm gonna pause for a second. Bad stuff you did. You might need a lawyer if you broke DRM to get to where you are. If you violated an NDA, and NDAs can come in all sorts of forms that you might not even know that you signed. If you clicked through something that might have included an NDA, and you might really want to think about getting a lawyer before you make that vulnerability report. If you gained access to a non-public anything, or if you got some of your information from a non-public source, you might want to at least think about getting a lawyer before you make your report. If your employer will be pissed that you're going to DEF CON and telling people how to get free subway rides for life, then maybe you might need a lawyer before you go to DEF CON and tell people that. Note, legal issues are not one size fits all, just like vulnerability reporting. There are tons of potential legal issues. I know some of the legal issues in American law. I know very few or maybe no issues in European law. Some of them might be a contract that you might be bound to, your employment agreement. For instance, if you found this vulnerability as part of your employment and now you're no longer at the company. Copyright could be a significant problem. Trade secrets might be a problem. Patents can be a problem. Anti-circumvention provisions could be a huge problem, depending. And then if you did something that could be construed in one jurisdiction or another as a crime, you will want to, as I said earlier, get a lawyer if any of that is true. Okay, disclosure due. This one's easy. If you have discovered a bug at a company that has a bug bounty program, go nuts. Use their bug bounty program. They're put there for a reason. Otherwise, if you found a vulnerability at a company that does not have a bug bounty problem, chances are you're not going to get paid for it. It has happened. It's very rare. So don't get your hopes up. If there is no bug bounty program, do not demand money for any reason, because that could be construed as extortion or blackmail. It's not a good idea. Bug bounty don't. Who recognizes this? Raise your hand. Okay. A couple of you recognize this. Facebook has a bug bounty program. Khalil found a bug in the Facebook API that allowed him to post to an arbitrary user ID's wall whether or not he had posting permission to that user ID. He submitted the bug through Facebook's bug bounty program. Not exactly clear on why. I don't have the wording of his submission, and this person is not a client of ours. Apparently, Edward Snowden is his user profile picture, which I kind of like. But they ignored him. And so he upped the game a little bit and posted on Mark Zuckerberg's wall. Okay, that got attention. It got the bug fixed. So he met goal number one. He did fix the thing. And he did it quite effectively, right? Because he posted to Mark Zuckerberg's wall, and they were like, holy shit, you can post to Mark Zuckerberg's wall. And so they fixed the bug. He didn't get paid for the bug bounty program. Why? Because he didn't follow the rules. The bug bounty program says that you can't exploit the bug as part of the and still claim the bounty. Facebook's bug bounty program says that if you want to claim the bounty, you have to submit a proof of concept but not actually exploit it. Or if you exploit it, you can exploit it on accounts you own or something like that. So if you're going for a bug bounty, don't do that. But if you're going for fixing the thing, and you're reasonably certain that you're not going to get sued or charged with a crime, which in this context, I don't know if he should have been certain about that. It turned out that he was not sued and he was not charged with a crime. Then go ahead and do this. But really, it's not the best idea. If I were him, I would have tried to resubmit the bug through the bug bounty program, maybe worded differently. As you can see, he says, "Dear Mark Zuckerberg, first, sorry for breaking your privacy and post to your wall. I has no other choice to make after all the reports I sent to Facebook team." His first language is probably not English. Maybe he could have gotten help on that part of the submission. Okay. What if you've now gone beyond fixing all the things and your goal is to publish or present the vulnerability that you've discovered? Sometimes this goes hand in hand with fixing all the things. Often it goes hand in hand with fixing all the things. If you have found a vulnerability, for instance, in a standard rather than a product, There may be no person to report it to. Actually, let me pause for a second. I was talking with Roger from Tor the other night, and when I was outlining a little bit of what I was going to say in this talk, and he said, "Oh yeah, people when they report vulnerabilities in Tor, they will often just like post a vulnerability on their own webpage and say, 'Holy crap, I wish someone at Tor would pay attention to this.'" Okay, there are people at Tor, right? You can email somebody at Tor and they will read your email. So just because it's a standard doesn't mean there's not a person. I mean, Tor is also, it's not just a protocol, it's a product, so there are people. But even if it's just a standard or a protocol, there may well be people that you can email. Okay, so now getting back to publishing or presenting. Sometimes, really the only way of getting this thing fixed is to make the entire world know about it. And in that case, you're going to need to publish or present. Sometimes you have for your own, in your own calculus, decided that publishing or presenting and disclosing the bug in public is going to be better for you, for whatever reason, than disclosing the bug in private. That's a decision that you should make as early as possible, whether you're going to disclose this to the company or to the developer before you publish or present, or if Free Subway Rides for Life is going to be the first thing that they hear about the vulnerability in their product. I'm not going to judge you, and I'm not going to tell you that you need to do one or the other, but it's something that you need to think about. And think about it early. Maybe like before you submit the talk, and it's not like a week before DEF CON. If you disclose first, before your talk or before your paper, it'll give the developer an opportunity to fix the bug. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe the way it is, you know, these are Samsung smart TVs that are in 3 million living rooms all across the world, and unless people update their firmware, there's no way of pushing updates. So maybe there really is no opportunity to fix it in deployed devices. Maybe there is. So that's something that you need to think about. However, if you disclose the vulnerability prior to publication, you're going to run into a possible problem. You're going to give them an opportunity. You're going to give Volkswagen an opportunity to prevent you from disclosing a serious vulnerability in the keyless entry system of Porsches and Audis, right? That happened this year at Usenix. I don't know if they disclosed privately, but they published the abstract in Usenix because that's what Usenix does. And Volkswagen was able to go to a court in the UK and get an injunction preventing them from giving their talk. Their talk didn't happen. There are side issues here about timing, how long to give a developer before publishing. Again, there's no one size fits all. Might be a week, might be 6 months, might be a year. I cannot give you the answer to this question without a whole lot more information, which we're not gonna do here tonight. Jurisdiction is another one. Hypothetically, if the Volkswagen talk had happened in the United States, a court would not have been able to enjoin it the way that it did, but that's only hypothetically. If a judge wanted to ignore the law, maybe that could have happened in the United States. Okay, I've alluded to this, but now I'm just gonna say it. When I was writing these slides, I couldn't decide whether the next one was a do or a don't. Who here knows what I'm talking about on this slide? Cindy does, Kurt does. The EFFers all raised their hands because they were there. Okay, there were a group of MIT students a few years ago who submitted a talk to DEF CON with this title. But they didn't actually mean Free Subway Rides for Life. What they meant was they had discovered a vulnerability in the Boston Smart Card or the Boston Fare Card system that allowed you to add an arbitrary value to the cards. They titled their talk Free Subway Rides for Life, and this got headlines, and this pissed the hell out of the Boston MTA. The Boston MTA was not an organization familiar with security vulnerability reporting. They're not, this isn't Cisco, this isn't Intel, this isn't Facebook. This is a transportation agency. They don't necessarily think about these things in the way that you, security researchers, do. And when they saw Free Subway Rides for Life, one of the things which they might have thought from this title was, oh my God, these kids are gonna give people a step-by-step on how to get free subway rides for life. So why did I say that I didn't know whether this was a do or a don't? How much attention is too much attention? What type of attention is the right attention? This is an important decision for you to make, and you need to make it, you need to actually make the decision. You can't let the decision be made for you. You need to think about whether free subway rides for life is going to piss off the people who you're disclosing to more than it will get you people to come to your talk. If you're DJB and you submit a talk that says DJB has something to say, people are gonna come to it. If you're a random MIT student and you submit a talk that says random MIT student has something to say, no one's gonna come to it. So you need to, there's a line to walk, and everybody is in between those two things. So think about what you're gonna put in your abstract, think about what you're gonna put in your talk title to get just enough attention of the right kind, and try maybe not to make the company think that you're gonna teach people how to steal their shit. Think about how the title will read to all of your audiences. The press, law enforcement, the company, potential employers, current employers, conference goers, paper readers, you know, whatever. Are you really gonna give step-by-step instructions on how to get free subway rides for life? Or are you gonna disclose a pretty bad vulnerability in the fare card? I mean, those are two ways of saying the same thing, so think about it. Disclosure due. Okay, now this, when I was talking at the front about goals, this comes down to you've decided to publish or present. Maybe you've already disclosed the vulnerability to the company, maybe not. Disclosure due, release a proof of concept. If you want to, you know, if you've decided to release a proof of concept, release one that is enough for someone of your level of technical ability to understand the vulnerability. You want to release enough so that they know what the fuck you're talking about, and not so much that the script kiddies can run with it. If you have discovered a vulnerability in Pandora that allows you to save full copies of MP3s of all the songs that they do, maybe your proof of concept's not going to be a browser plugin. you know, maybe. Consider dual uses. Consider whether the proof of concept is doing something to advance the state of the art in security, or whether it's something that's just going to let people get free shit. So the Free Subway Life for Rides kids weren't actually gonna tell people how to get free shit. They were going to advance the state of fare card security. For proof of concept, think more about releasing your proof of concept for academics and not for the kiddies. The kiddies don't need your help. This is another thing where I'm gonna be judging you a little bit. Don't help them because they don't need it. Okay, that's what I just said. There are better ways of advancing the state of the art in security than releasing a browser plugin that will let you scrape Visa card transactions, because that doesn't really advance the state of the art in security. In fact, it does the exact opposite. Even though it is a perfect working proof of concept, it doesn't help. Okay, that's all I have. My voice has amazingly held up, and I'm ready to go for questions. Here are some resources that we have. At the EFF website, this is our coders' rights page, eff.org/issues/coders, and we have that wonderful picture of a cat on the page because that's the kind of people we are. You can always email info@eff.org, and I promise that someone will read the email. That does not go to DevNull, it goes to our intake coordinator, who is awesome and knows what he's talking about and will flag the issue appropriately. You can also email me. There's my email address, and there's my Twitter. Okay.
Okay, first of all, thank you, Nate. So now we have time for Q&A. So if you have any questions, you can line up at the microphones, and we'll start with a question from the internet.
When looking over the past few years, are researchers getting better or worse at disclosing effectively, and are companies getting better or worse at responding to disclosures?
It's a mixed bag. Security researchers are often, I see a lot of young faces in this room, so people may not have been around for a few years. Those of you who have been around for a few years have gotten better. Companies who have been around for a few years have gotten better. That said, with the Internet of Things, we are discovering more and more security vulnerabilities in more and more things that the designers of which may not have ever thought, like a television. A TV engineer would never, 5 years ago, have thought about security, ever. That's not something they would have thought about. Now there are TVs that are internet-enabled that have a camera on them that are running a real-time operating system in your living room at all times. That's a huge attack vector. Samsung is good. The Samsung TV people, I don't know. I'm sorry I can't answer that question, but the Internet of Things has really thrown a monkey wrench into all of this.
Okay, now from a guy in the back.
Hi. I am not allowed to talk about the specific vulnerability, so I need to keep it as vague as possible. I found a vulnerability in a CMS, content management system, and the vendor is not that helpful in disabling in fixing the vulnerability. This CMS is very many firms, big firms in Germany, use it. What would be the best way to keep them safe? So they got this vulnerability. It's even a backdoor in there and stuff like that.
So I can't answer your question in a specific, but let me answer it in a more general way. That's the most common problem that security researchers have. They submit the vulnerability. The manufacturer understands the vulnerability, but they just don't patch it. The market isn't there. There are lots of ways to deal with this. One of them is publishing. That will bring market pressure to bear to get this thing fixed. It might also expose the vulnerability in a way that will make people unsafe. So that's it's a fine line to walk, and maybe come up after or email me tomorrow and we can talk more about it. But that's, there is no one size fits all. The line between getting them to take you seriously and fixing it and publishing in a way that might give people script kiddies or black hats ammunition, it's tough. But one of the ways you can get them to take you seriously is to publish. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. That might not be the right solution for you, so let's talk.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, number one, please.
So if you submit a bug report, a vulnerability report, and the company does not react, how soon do you follow up? When are you going to start setting deadlines somewhere along the lines of, if you do not answer within 1 month, I'm going to make this public and stuff like that?
Again, it depends on how serious this thing is. If you found a serious vulnerability in a SCADA product that's in traffic lights and power stations all around the world and people might die, then maybe don't give them very much time. But if this is in SCADA, it might be really hard to patch. Then maybe you should give them time. So it's extremely dependent on the exact circumstances of the bug. And I couldn't tell you what the answer is. Sometimes it's a week, sometimes it's 6 months, sometimes it's a year. Don't know.
Do we have more questions from the internet?
Yeah. Oh, internet.
Yes, there is kind of one vague question. Do you see any difference in the way you're reporting responsibly to, say, if it's a bug in an actual product or if it's the application or the usage of a product, if someone's using something wrong? Is there any difference in the way you report bugs?
I mean, every bug is reported differently, but generally speaking, no, I don't see a difference in, there's no difference in type, at least in my mind. A vulnerability is a vulnerability, and reporting it to the people, the person or people who have the ability to fix it, whether it's in an application or you know, a protocol or a stack or whatever it is the best way to go.
Okay, number two, please.
Hi, I'm one of the founders of hackmail.nl, which is a possibility for Dutch people to anonymously disclose.
Okay.
You've briefly touched the subject of being anonymous, but what would you recommend? In which circumstances do you report something anonymously, and when do you not do it anonymously? Is there any rule of thumb for you?
No rule of thumb.
None at all.
It totally depends. You know, if you're Jake Applebaum and you find a vulnerability disclosure, there's probably no reason to do it anonymously. Mm-hmm. Or if you find a vulnerability, there's probably no reason to disclose anonymously. Mm-hmm. If you're someone with a checkered past, then maybe there is. If you're someone who just wants to be anonymous for whatever reason, if you live in an area where being a hacker is not okay, if your employer is not great with you doing what you do, then disclose anonymously. But no, there's no rule of thumb.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, number one, please.
Isn't hunting down a project manager on LinkedIn?
What was that?
Isn't hunting down a project manager on LinkedIn and then confronting him with the bug that he probably should have not let public in the first place? Isn't that more likely to scare the crap out of him?
It depends on how that first interaction goes. If you say, hey, I'm a friendly hacker on the internet, and I found this thing that which you probably weren't expecting, a bizarre and a strange use of the product that will allow someone to do something that you didn't intend, and I would like to help you fix it, then probably not. But it depends. If this is someone with a particularly big or thorny ego, then maybe it will. But we have found that the closer the people are to being developers like you, like people who know security engineering, then no, you're not likely to piss them off.
So if you have visibility, I mean, have you seen numbers? Have you seen?
I don't have numbers. I only have anecdotes.
Anecdotes.
But again, like your product sucks versus, hey, I'd like to help you make your product better. That can really set the tone for the communication going forward.
What would you recommend to product managers of companies or of organizations that are not experienced with dealing with security vulnerabilities that are contacted for the first time?
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah.
Let me think about that one for a second. Okay. I guess take it seriously. Treat any, I'm just talking off the cuff on this one, but you know, there's no reason to treat a bug report off the internet any different than a bug report in your internal reporting system. You know, any developer is going to have a reporting system, a bug tracking system. I mean, maybe if this is the first time, just open a ticket on it. I don't know. That would be my best advice. If this is not a software company, if this is, you know, if this is an insulin pump manufacturer, then maybe you have to think about it a little differently. But they probably have a bug reporting system also. So treat it like you would any other bug, treat it like you would an internal bug report. I guess that would be my advice.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm.
Okay, are there any more questions?
Okay,
well then, thank you, Nate. And everybody, have a good time.